Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the silly permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios. National mortgage lender. Quicken Loans. Apply simply. Understand fully. Mortgage confidently. Thanks for being with us. DA with you. CBS Sports Radio. A fine Thursday. We'll go inside a match made in silver and black heaven. David Carr and John Gruden coming up here in about 17 minutes from now. The dessert coordinator has his top five ice cream truck choices. Since it is the summer, the ice cream truck is mandatory. And we'll also have Spurs insider Hector Ledesma from San Antonio's KCWX coming up at 40 minutes past the hour. Larry Fedora yesterday, UNC head coach, had some pretty dramatic comments defending football and questioning the connection between football and CTE. Well, I think we all know, if you're doubting the connection between combat sports, collision sports, collision activities, and brain trauma, you're on your own island. This is not just about football. This is about all types of collisions, all types of impact to a young developing brain causing brain trauma. And football clearly checks that box. And if you're doubting that connection at this point in time, I don't know what to tell you. You'll just look really, really silly down the road when it's proven. Black and white, and we all just widely accept it. But I thought more than that for Fedora, he really went super melodramatic. When he said, "Our game is under attack, I fear that the game will be pushed so far from what we know that we won't recognize it 10 years from now. And if it does, our country will go down too." He cited a general, unnamed, saying how the U.S. military is the greatest military because our soldiers have football as their background. Look, I realize this is probably wrapped in a modern day political take as well, that people are soft, that military might is right, and that we can't allow the country, we can't allow society to become too soft, quote unquote, snowflakes, for fear that we would lose our dominance, which we're already losing globally. I realize there's a lot of this that's wrapped in that with this coding, but I want to cite a few things here. Number one, I've got family, active family in the military at a very, very high level. They did not play football growing up. So the idea that all of our military is great, all of our military is strong because of football as the background is a remarkable reach. You're telling me everybody that fights in our military, who we all respect, this is certainly a place where I have complete respect for those that protect and serve. I mean, we have amazing female military. Do we assume that they played football growing up? It's just such a remarkable stretch that it's so silly. It's just so silly. Number two, around the turn of the century, football was really brutal. Football was so brutal because of lack of helmets, because it was really more like rugby, that it was simply just bloody collisions all over the place, that a lot of young men were dying. So much so that the sport was truly under threat of being disbarred, banned, and never being played again, because it was basically just a death match. And in the 1890s and around the turn of the century, it was truly a sport where we wondered, will this be outlawed? And at this point in time, there was a huge amount of hysteria that we cannot soften football, because if we do, we lose our toughness as a country. Let me read to you an article about Teddy Roosevelt's responsibility and his role in saving football and making it safer. Quote, historic notions of manhood swept America in the post-Civil War period, driven by cultural fear of an emasculated generation of young men devoid of military experience. An agrarian life gave way to creeping urbanization and industrialization, the voices of social Darwinism sounding the softness alarm. How would our tender boys become hardy men? Now, Teddy Roosevelt believed in football. Teddy Roosevelt loved football. And Teddy Roosevelt continually espoused being hardy and tough, and that's the way America will remain strong. But Teddy Roosevelt also realized we can't just have kids dying. And so he enacted a number of changes politically to make sure the sport was saved and made safer. Now, that is about 110 years ago. In the 1890s, people were worried we're becoming too soft. So I'm sorry if in 2018 I hear it and go, we're still doing this. Larry Fedora, we're still doing this. 1895, Larry Fedora's great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather is saying, if football goes down the wrong road, we become too soft, and the country goes down with it. And today, Larry Fedora is saying, if football goes too soft, the country's going down with it. Pardon me if I'm a little hesitant in embracing that idea. It's hysteria, it's worry, it's paranoia, and it's unbased. Because in 1890, we made the game safer. It just so happened that a couple of decades later, we created, as a country, the quote-unquote greatest generation, who saved the world from tyranny, Nazism, and all of that. Somehow we created the greatest generation post-hysteria around the country's becoming too soft. Football is the indicator. When you hear this, don't buy it. When you hear this, realize they're just trying to get you riled up. When you hear this, realize there is history that negates that argument. And it's unfortunate because for Larry Fedora, he is the leader of an academic institution. Granted, he's not on the academic side, but he is a face of what is supposed to be higher learning and higher ed. And a quick history lesson from eighth grade could help out Larry Fedora here. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number, and that's toll-free, 855-212-4227. I thought this story from Frank Thomas was really interesting, and it didn't get a lot of play, I thought, going into All-Star break. Frank Thomas says that he was the player most hurt by the steroid era. He said in the 1990s, so many guys were on it that he was the most hurt by it, ironically nicknamed the Big Hurt. And Frank Thomas cites that he's only number 9 as a top 10 hitter of the 90s in terms of home runs. He ranks number 9 on the top 10 list. Here was Frank Thomas discussing with Jim Rome not long ago about how he kind of knew Sammy Sosa wasn't what we saw later on when he played with him early.
Well, I knew it was shady when Sammy Sosa hit 60 home runs. Sammy Sosa was my teammate for 3 years coming up. So, you know, watching his career and watching him grow, first 3 years, he was capable only between 25 and 27 home runs at the most.
Now, that was from Frank Thomas's conversation with Jim Rome on Showtime Sports. Let's hear more from Frank Thomas on the steroid hitters like Sammy Sosa during his generation.
With Sammy, I'm just, you know, there's no way he doubled me up. That's all I could think. Sammy knows, well, no way Sammy doubled me up. But Mark McGwire, you really had to take a look at it because Mark McGwire hit 48 home runs as a rookie. So at that point, you start saying, well, maybe, you know, with the extreme workaholic like he was in the weight room, I mean, you could close the gap easier from 40, from 48 to 70 from 25 to 60.
Actually, 49 home runs as a rookie, although it's kind of hard to believe that Mark McGwire didn't also take steroids then as well. But either way, you had Big Hurt, Frank Thomas, hitting 521 home runs. 521. He had some amazing seasons. He drove in a ton of runs. A .134, 125, 128, 41 home runs, 40 home runs, 35 home runs. Then he clearly tailed off at the end. And the Big Hurt is in the Hall of Fame. The Big Hurt won two MVPs. He was one of the most critical hitters, crucial hitters, clutch hitters of all time, arguably, but certainly of his generation. Only made five All-Star games, though. The Big Hurt had an amazing run there, but he was overshadowed by these guys that played longer and had greater home run totals in a lot of ways. And I think he's got a really good argument because I went back and looked at home run leaders of the 1990s. And you truly could make the argument that Frank Thomas was overshadowed more than anybody else. Listen to this list of home run hitters and think about their steroid connection. Number one, in the 1990s, Mark McGwire hit 405 home runs, admitted to taking steroids. Number two was Griffey, never connected to it, 382. So he's clean, as far as we know. Number three, Barry Bonds, 361. We know he took steroids. He's even said he took the cream of the clear, but just didn't know it was a steroid. It was flaxseed oil. Number four was Albert Bell. Never directly connected. Was connected to a corked bat. Did have a monster temper. And people wondered aloud about Albert Bell in the 1990s. Number five, Juan Gonzalez, named in the Mitchell Report. Number six, Sammy Sosa. Number seven, Rafael Palmeiro. Number eight, Jose Canseco. And number 10, Matt Williams, who was busted for taking steroids and HGH in 2002. Look at that list of the top 10. The only guys that are clear are Frank Thomas and Ken Griffey Jr. And Thomas is number nine on the list of the 1990s. It's pretty amazing. He's right. He's in the Hall of Fame. But had there not been, if Frank Thomas was clean, and had there not been this incredible explosion of steroids across the league at that given time, Frank Thomas's place in history would be so much higher. So much higher. And I realize that that is the argument for keeping steroid guys out of the Hall of Fame, is that not everybody was doing it. A lot of guys were doing it, but not everybody. But boy, I wonder, what happens if this list is the ratio of steroid users in baseball at that era? Is it possible 8 out of 10 players took steroids in that era? Is it possible that it's closer to 75% than 25 or 35%? Is it possible 3 out of every 4 guys was taking steroids at that time? At least for these home run hitters, and maybe that's a little slanted because they're home run hitters, but that's a pretty eye-popping number. 8 out of the 10 guys on that list, at least 7 out of the 10, depending on where you fall in Albert Bell, took steroids. When we come back here on the show, in Oakland, happy, happy, joy, joy, doing the Ren and Stimpy dance. David Carr and John Gruden will discuss this coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Watch the simulcast of the show at watchda.com. That is mobile friendly, whether you have an Android phone, an Apple phone, or something else. You can always watch the show every morning WatchDA.com or on your laptop, your PC, or your tablet. And tonight at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, tune in to CBS Sports Network and follow the stories of struggle and strength of some of the world's greatest athletes. It's the 2018 CrossFit Games, Road to the Fittest, on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Everyone, there's a quick way you can save money switching to Geico. Need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, too? Get it all. Geico.com. Quincy's in Michigan. Good morning, Quincy. Quincy, you there, buddy? One, two, three, three, two, one.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Get him out.
Get him out. Trapdoor. Get him out.
Get him out.
So, in Oakland, we could use some good news when it comes to the Raiders. We don't know if this is the final season of the Raiders in Oakland. Have no idea what's going to happen to them in 2019. So for now, let the positivity of John Gruden being the new head coach wash over you. David Carr joined the Jim Rome Show here on CBS Sports Radio yesterday and said he's always had a connection to his new head coach, even dating back to his QB camp.
I just remember us really hitting it off, and you know, one of the people that was working the event, working the show, came and told me, and you know, as we were finishing up, like, hey, I think you're his favorite one that he's ever done. You know, you listen, you wanted to learn from him, all of those things, and you know, I think you guys hit it off really well. I told him, I think so too.
We've had David Carr on the show actually when he was in college, and he was an amazing interview. He was so thoughtful and smart and articulate and knew football inside and out and just seemed to have a great head on his shoulders. And you just knew, okay, there's something about this kid. There's something about this kid that this will translate. And clearly it has. I mean, David Carr is one of the best quarterbacks in the game, not young quarterbacks anymore, even though last year was a down season for the Raiders. He is one of the best quarterbacks in the game. But there was a kismet. There is a connection. There is something there between David Carr and Jim Rome. Got it out of Dave. Dave saying, I love John Gruden.
Everything I dreamed of and thought of about him, it's been all that and then some. We love football. You know, we want to win. We love to compete. We love to demand from one another. I'm in his ear every day. What do you have for me today? What are you teaching me today? And he's in there pushing me. If I can complete in a practice, go 30 for 31, and we'll spend an hour talking about that one I missed and how that could be the difference in a game. And that's exactly how I want it.
Can I say that I hope the Carr is right. I hope that Derek Carr has this kismet, this connection, this relationship, this synergy with John Gruden, and it sings. I really do. Because, number one, we need contenders in the AFC for the Patriots because the NFC is stacked. The NFC, you look around, and whether it's the Eagles or the Vikings, the Packers, the Rams, up and down, you see potential power teams, the Falcons. Up and down, you're looking at teams that are, you're going, those are really good teams that might not make the playoffs. In the AFC, it feels like everyone's chasing the Patriots, and there's not that same parity or that power structure. So the Raiders being really good would be great for everybody in the NFL. But I got to tell you, there's a part of me that just doubts that John Gruden is going to go out there with all of his Monday Night Football persona and shtick, and we're going to bring it back to the 90s and play old school, and this is my guy, and I'm going to focus on the one miss instead of the 30 makes that you have. And I just feel like it's not going to work, that John Gruden has been gone for so long that detachment is going to really hurt him. And I realized that he was around the game. He's doing these quarterback camps for TV. He's doing Monday Night Football, and he's talking to coaches and players, but it's different than when you're in there, when the pressure is on and you've got to deliver and that your job is on the line and you've got to scout and grind and spend all hours of the night looking at film. It's just a totally different beast. And I've seen it happen so many times where guys leave and come back and they just don't have the same magic. I mean, Dick Vermeil took that time off and came back and did win a Super Bowl, but his first two seasons, I mean, they were 4-12. And then he left to go to Kansas City, and they were good, but they were never Super Bowl champions. And you see what happened to Joe Gibbs 2.0. Coaches that go away, it's hard to get that back after a long time. And I hope that Carr is right. I hope this is a beautiful symphony in Oakland, because that city deserved their football team to give them a swan song of glory. But I don't know. I'm worried about Gruden in Oakland. I really am. The dessert coordinator has been named such because once upon a time he gave us one of the greatest tricks ever, and that was how to eat a cupcake. He said instead of biting into it, into the side of it, instead twist off the top of the cupcake and flip it underneath.
Icing sandwich.
It becomes an icing sandwich. Take off part of the top of the cupcake, put it underneath, and now you've basically got an ice cream sandwich, a dessert sandwich, but in this case, it's a cupcake sandwich. And that blew everybody's hair back. Even Mraz, as a thick tater, he was, because Mraz has no integrity, stole the idea and started peddling it as his own.
Unbelievable.
But Brad Heller, as dessert coordinator, is back, and Pete the Body Bilotti wants production out of that position. He wants you to earn your contract. And so today, Brad Heller is going to release his top five treats out of the ice cream truck. Now, there is pressure on you. I'm getting tweets about this.
Wow.
But I'll let you have the list first before we go through the reaction. And so, Brad Heller, start with the number five, the number five treat out of an ice cream truck.
Okay, chances are if you're going to an ice cream truck, it's hot out, it's humid out, you need something to quench that thirst to make you feel a little better, a little cooler. So number five, I'm going to stick with something traditional, a bomb pop, a firecracker. It's going to quench that thirst. Yeah, your mouth or tongue will be red or blue, whatever, but it's going to feel good, and you're going to look like every other person on that block.
I like how you gave both titles, because it could be a bomb pop in some parts of the country, a firecracker in others.
Trying to relate to everybody here.
Nice job. Number four.
Number four, I get a lot of criticism as a dessert coordinator or as a dessert aficionado for only giving chocolate suggestions. I stick with chocolate a lot. So
I'm going to do chocolate guy.
I am. It's a problem. I'm going to go a little combo here at number four, the chocolate eclair or the strawberry shortcake. Basically the same type of thing. It's got the nuts on the outside. But when you bite inside, you're either going to get strawberry or you're going to get that chocolate eclair one. So either one at number four.
I like where this list is going right now. I really do.
I do too.
And I will say that you are more passionate about dessert than anybody else that I know, so I trust that you are going to deliver here. Number three.
I have this adrenaline rush right now. I've been up since 3 a.m., but something about dessert just gets me going. All right, number three. Look, everybody loves a taco, so why not stick some ice cream in it and sell it at a truck? I mean, chances are there's not going to be any left because it's one of the more popular items, but a choco taco at number three.
I love it, and I think that I love tacos in general so much that to have a dessert taco is just the gift that keeps on giving. And every time I go to the truck, I'm always wondering, Choco Taco, do you have any left?
It's stressful. It can be stressful when you look at all the options on the side of the truck. A Choco Taco, you can't go wrong,
though. You can't go wrong. You know, to think that the salsa on top is chocolate, it's just so brilliant, isn't it? It's just so brilliant. Plus, you're sprinkling kind of like the lettuce, the nuts. All of it is just so, as engineering goes for desserts, it's brilliant.
Such a clever idea.
It's a swirl ice cream. It's not vanilla or chocolate. It's both.
Yeah. And there's the waffle cone is the taco shell. It has it all.
It's brilliant. It really is brilliant.
I don't know who created that, but it's a genius idea. Number two.
Number two, I'm going to go back to my childhood because I couldn't resist any kind of ice cream that had a gumball on it.
Mm.
Now, we were talking about it before the segment. I couldn't remember the actual name. I was saying Buffalo Bill's Bubble-O Bill.
Bubble-O Bill.
But you can't find those anymore, so I'm going to lump in all the character pops that have either the gumball for the eyes or the nose. So you got Sonic the Hedgehog,
right.
SpongeBob SquarePants, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, whichever one you want to use.
Yeah. There was the Mickey Mouse one, right?
There's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Mario.
Bugs Bunny's got one. Mario.
So the character pops that have a gumball as the nose.
Yeah, different flavor ice creams depending on which one you get, but there's gumball on it somewhere. So after you finish the ice cream, you get a little treat. You get a gumball that's going to last 7 seconds before the flavor dies out.
The Bubble-O Bill is a great one because he was a cowboy. And he looked kind of like an old Rough Rider from the turn of the century. Speaking of Teddy Roosevelt, but a gumball nose on that cowboy, that's my type of cowboy.
And if the gumball fell off while you were eating the ice cream, it ruined your day.
All right. And finally, number one.
Number one, pretty standard, the Chipwich. Chocolate chip cookies and then vanilla ice cream in the middle. Gosh, it's just a staple in my home.
So, this is a great list, but you did not go with the classic swirl, the soft serve vanilla chocolate swirl. Is that outdated?
No, I mean, you get yourself a swirl in the Choco Taco. I feel like that kind of encompasses everything. But for me, I mean, it's like chocolate chip cookies. I can't resist them. And then you throw ice cream in the middle. That's my number one. I know that's going to create debate, but that would be my number one.
Brad Heller's dessert coordinator power rankings of the ice cream truck desserts. What'd you think?
I thought it was a solid list, but you missed out the orange creamsicle. That needs to be there.
Oh, I wouldn't put that anywhere near my top five.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not a creamsicle guy, no.
Oh, that's a legendary bar. I had that maybe once a week when I was a kid.
Okay.
Creamsicle, fudgesicle, those were, as I was looking at it, those were options. Those were potential.
Were those first teams out?
Yeah, I would say maybe six, maybe seven.
They're in the NIT of this bracket.
maybe even the CBI. I don't know.
What about a playing game?
All right,
they're going to Dayton for the first four.
That's your top five ice cream truck desserts. If you'd like to weigh in via Twitter, you can do so. DA on CBS will read through the reaction to the list. Also, when we come back, reaction from San Antonio on the Kawhi Leonard trade. Did the Spurs get enough in return? DA, CBS Sports Radio, Brett Heller has your headlines.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
41 minutes past the hour, DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Make sure that you are locked into the DA show every day with what you may have missed by going to iTunes, search DA CBS Sports. Also, the website daoncbs.com. Also, on our website, you'll see the video clips at watchda.com and on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDAShow. All places you can find the best of the DA. So apparently I mentioned a couple of times that Derek Carr was David Carr. Matt tweets, DA, it's Derek. Matt tweets, you've called him David about five times already. White Mike Wilbon tweets, it's Derek, DA, David's his older brother. Jordan tweets, who's David Carr? I think you mean Derek Carr, hashtag get him out. Baker Mayfield. I would take Bradley. I would take David Carr as the quarterback of the Oakland Raiders. Joining us here on the DA show, a very close friend of mine who has covered the Spurs for a long, long time. Every time there is a Spurs deal that goes down, a Spurs story, a Spurs soap opera, and there's not many of the soap opera parts, always lean on him for perspective because he's been there the longest. He knows what's going on. And yesterday, the Spurs trade away an NBA Finals MVP and a guy that could have been the cornerstone for a long time there. My good friend Hector Ledesma from San Antonio, sports director, Sports Tonight, also a member of KCWX Television in San Antonio. Mr. Hector Ledesma, how you doing, buddy?
So you're telling me David Carr and Derek Carr aren't the same guy?
I just learned that this morning, so my bad. That's my bad. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. First off, do you think the Spurs got the best deal they could for Kawhi?
Considering the circumstances, yes. And here's why. When Kawhi made the trade demands and he said he wanted to go to L.A., the first thing you thought from a Spurs perspective was assets, young players, draft picks. You didn't think, okay, they're going to get an established all-star just because the Lakers and the Clippers don't really – I mean, this is pre-LeBron. So, and even if LeBron was on the roster, he's not going anywhere. So you looked at the makeup of those rosters and you thought, well, there's no one on that team who's of quote-unquote equal value, you know. So, okay, let's get young guys, a Brandon Ingram, a Kyle Kuzma. You know, can you do a sign-and-trade with a Julius Randle, you know, draft picks down the line. Same thing with the Celtics, too, and the Sixers. You know, the Celtics with that big old war chest they have, not to mention Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. So when those guys became untouchable, you know, man, boy, the Spurs are kind of in a rough spot. They're going to have to slow play this thing, get into the season, and then hope that somebody gets desperate near the trade deadline. You know, one of these contenders, maybe Philly, maybe Boston, maybe LA. One of these folks says, okay, we've got to make a move, and we're not going to do it as, you know, we just stand pat. So for the Spurs to get a four-time All-Star out of this, I think is as good a deal as they could have gotten, considering the days of the big name blockbuster trade, you know, where you give up one star and you get another, those days are gone. So given what I just described and given the construct of the reality of the pro sports trade where salaries have to match and the numbers have to work, yeah, I think considering they got the best deal they could.
How much of the trade talks do you think were centered around not wanting to go through a rebuild because of where Pop is in his coaching career? I mean, maybe they could have gotten young pieces and draft picks, but do you think that they avoided that because Pop didn't want to go through lottery season to this point in his career?
You know, D.A., I think it was more along the lines of let's try to get what we think is the best value for Kawhi in terms of just straight-up value. Like, you know, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, those guys I just named, Josh Hart, they're nice, young, up-and-coming players. But let's say that neither one, it's unlikely. Those guys are pretty, at least one of those guys will probably turn into a multiple-time All-Star. But let's say that those guys kind of plateau. I mean, I think it's safe to say that those guys, if they plateau, they're not going to have as good an NBA career as DeMar DeRozan has had. And oh, by the way, DeMar DeRozan is still going to be only 29 years old by the time the season starts. So I think it was about, hey, let's make sure we get the best deal possible for Kawhi. And if it's going to include an up-and-comer, yeah, we'll take that. We want some good young players, but we also want the draft pick so that this thing keeps on moving forward. So I think it was more along the lines of, hey, look, we can get a guy who's been there. He's been to four All-Star games. I know he's had the playoff troubles, and, you know, LeBron did it to him again this past postseason. But I think it was more about getting the best possible value for Kawhi right now in terms of what they're giving up in Kawhi Leonard.
Hector Ledesma joins us from KCWX My2 in San Antonio to talk about the Kawhi Leonard deal. So there was some thought, there were the reports that they just did not want to trade with the Lakers no matter what because they didn't want to send him somewhere in the West. But does anything prevent the Raptors from before the trade deadline sending him to the Lakers or Clippers? I mean, is it possible we see Kawhi out West just in a couple of months anyway?
I don't think so for this reason. If you put yourself in the Raptors' shoes, you made this deal because you think that you have a shot to win the East right now. With LeBron no longer there, with Boston and Philly only getting better as the years go on, your shot to win the East is now. And I think they looked at their roster and they thought, we're good, but we're not good enough. You know, I mean, the Raptors' current day remind me of the old Spurs, the pre-Duncan Spurs, the David Robinson, Sean Elliott Spurs. You knew they were going to win between 50 and 60 games, sometimes 60-plus. You knew they were going to win maybe a playoff series just about every other year. But you knew the ceiling was the conference finals. They weren't going to do anything, and that's the Raptors go beyond that point. And that, to me, is the Raptors in the LeBron being in the East era. Now that he's gone, I think they're looking at the chance to strike. So if that's the mindset, if you've given up DeMar DeRozan, a guy who was not only a four-time or is not only a four-time All-Star, but wanted to be there and gave up the chance to go to L.A., you know, when he had the chance, you know, he's from Compton, you know, and he's a guy that could have easily gone back west and played somewhere else and you know, sought the limelight, sought, you know, a better situation, if you will, although, you know, Toronto's, you know, as we mentioned, has been pretty good the last couple of years. If you trade away him for potentially a one-year rental, and then you get, you know, who's one arguably one of the five best players in the league when healthy, and then you trade Kawhi Leonard for a bunch of young players from the Lakers, how are you in any better position to strike now that LeBron's not in the East? I mean, do Josh Hart, Kyle Kuzma, all those names that I've said a couple of times, do those a package of those guys, do a team with Kyle Lowry, you know, Obi and you know, Ibaka, does that core give you a chance to beat the Celtics and the 76ers in a seven-game series? I think that's a pretty obvious no. Whereas if Kawhi's right and you add him to that Raptors core, maybe they might be able to right now, not in a couple years from now, but right now beat a Sixers team that's still coming into its own and a Celtics team that I think is going to be pretty darn good. But if you're going to beat them, now's the time to beat them.
Kawhi Leonard's an NBA Finals MVP. Kawhi Leonard was the cornerstone of the franchise once Tim Duncan started to get up there in age and obviously retired. But did the San Antonio fans eventually turn on Kawhi Leonard, as loyal as they are, for his behavior at the end of the season and this offseason?
Yeah, turned, for lack of a better term, D.A., I think turned is appropriate. I mean, I'll put it to you this way. For several weeks now, it's been just do this thing, get rid of him. It was kind of the stages of grief. You know, at first it was denial. Oh, he doesn't really want to leave. And then it turned into, you know, I'm not bright enough to remember what the actual five stages are in order. But I think by the time we got to these last couple of weeks, it was pretty obvious. And it was like, okay, let's just get this over with. And, you know, by all accounts, most reactions yesterday from a locals perspective were good riddance. You know, good riddance, all right, see you soon. You could have been this. You could have had that. You could have, you know. He's leaving $80 million on the table to top this off, D.A. And that's what, you know, Spurs fans to a certain extent find that extremely insulting. What was so bad here that next year you're only going to be able to sign a four-year, $180 million the next year? If he leaves the Raptors after that, the max deal he can sign is even less than that, all while 5 years, $221 million was on the table here in San Antonio. So, and then the day-to-day, the specifics, you know, the him not ever coming out and saying anything along the lines, except for along the lines of, I want to be here and let me clear the air and this is what's going on. He did that twice during the entire NBA season last year when every other week, you were getting updates through his camp and through his people of this is going on. Well, he's not happy with this. Well, this. Well, that. Well, that. Well, that. I think after folks just got tired of it after a while, and so unfortunately, I think for him and the place, the mantle that he could have continued to carry, I think it was a sad ending for him here in San Antonio.
Hector Ledesma joins us from San Antonio. What's your best guess? We got about a minute left. What's your best guess on what created such incredible friction and this chasm between him and Pop?
Well, it's pretty simple, Dan, and it's not even really a guess. It's through people I've talked to, sources. Essentially, it comes down to this, and I can get it in here in the next 45 seconds because it is this simple. Kawhi gets hurt. He's on his way back. He doesn't quite feel right. The Spurs doctors say, hey, okay, we understand, but you're medically cleared to play. Take your time. At that point, he then goes to seek advice in New York. Doctors in New York, so one of them closely working with Philly. At that point, the door, for some odd reason, begins to shut on the Spurs. The Spurs are kind of left out in the cold. No communication with Kawhi from there on out. Players get frustrated. Pop gets frustrated. Hey, whatever's going on, talk to us. Tell us what's going on. Communication pretty much stops. Brings us to April. He's not even with the team on the bench come playoff time. And then from that point on, just a couple of weeks later, it was a trade. It was the demand for a trade.
I mean, but that seems so incredibly dramatic that would cause all of that. Do you think Kawhi's in the wrong for being too stubborn?
I think he cost himself a lot of money for being very stubborn. But here's the thing, D.A., is if he was set on going back to L.A. and that was most important to him, then, you know, to each his own. I'm with you. I can't understand why a guy would leave – that much money on the table and a chance to play for an organization that is, if not the best in sports, and right there, the top two or three best, and an envy of the way all sports, all teams, and all sports want to, you know, handle their business and the success they want to enjoy. But if the bottom line was, I want to go back to LA, and for a number of different reasons, not just because it's home, but maybe he's thinking about the next stage of his career, even though he's still a young guy, to each his own, that is what's puzzling, is what was so bad that drove him away, because it wasn't comments by Tony Parker or Manu Ginobili or Greg Popovich. If that's the case, then you demand a trade, but you demand a trade to go anywhere. He was demanding a trade specifically to LA. Once you do that, comments made by former teammates or now former teammates, really, that argument really doesn't resonate.
Hector Ledesma joining us from KCWX Television, My Two in San Antonio. Follow him on Twitter for the latest on the Spurs for all you guys in Texas. And we got a ton of Spurs fans listening right now at Hector Ledesma JR. Hector Ledesma JR on Twitter. My man, always good to catch up, brother. Thanks so much.
All right, buddy. We'll see you soon.
Okay. When we come back here on the show, do the Angels just put a clown nose on Rob Manfred? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.